Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly. Asia's swift recovery from the global health crisis has kept the region at the top of Banker Julius Baer's Lifestyle Index 2021 when it comes to most expensive region. Shanghai was ranked as the most expensive city on the index, clinching the top spot from Hong Kong, which was pushed to third place, while Tokyo came in as second most expensive city. Singapore is ranked ninth, positioned between London and New York. The wide-ranging index tracks prices and consumer behavior to gauge the price inflation of a basket of goods and services, representative of the high-net-worth individual lifestyle in cities around the globe. Julius Baer says that with this, investors can estimate the portfolio returns needed to preserve or even grow their purchasing power. To find out more, we're joined today by Mark Matthews, Head of Research Asia Pacific at Banker Julius Baer. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're most welcome. Thank you for having me.
So Mark, from wine to treadmills to cars to property, the index covered a wide range of items. What were some of the key trends from this latest report?
If I had to pick just one, really, in the interest of time, to me it's the amazing divergence in the growth rate between wealthy people's inflation and inflation for the average person in Asia. And I bet what you're thinking is that wealthy people's inflation went up by a lot more. But in fact, it was the opposite. And we've been running an Asian high net worth individual lifestyle index in Asia for 10 years. The index is up 7% over 10 years, which is tiny. Just think about it. If your cost of living had gone up 7% over the last 10 years, for the average person in Asia, the cost of living has gone up that time period. So that's the funny thing, because it's weird. In most other parts of the world, like in America, for example, cost of living for wealthy people usually outpaces the cost of living for the average person.
And so why is that?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I would say is to talk about the average person. The big thing is food, and food is 30% of the CPI basket in China, even though incomes in China have gone up 20 times in the last 20 years, food is still a third of that index. In India, it's 50%. And for most other countries in Asia, it's somewhere in between. And food prices in Asia have been rising about 5% per year over the last decade. Now, in our high net worth individual index, food is a much smaller percent of costs, and it's represented by what we call a degustation dinner. So that's an expensive tasting menu. It's only 4% of our index. So that's one thing. Now, as for the wealthy people and their inflation rate, why was it so constant? Why was it zero, actually? Then the answer, I think, is primarily residential property, because residential property has the biggest weighting in our index. And in many cities in Asia, I mean, I'm just thinking about Singapore, for example, residential property prices went up so much in the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s. But if you think about it, they haven't really gone up very much in the last 10 years, because they're already so expensive. So even rich people kind of balk at the idea of paying, say, 20, 30, 40% more than what prices are today. And a lot of governments in Asia have put restrictions on property prices to try to stop the speculators from pushing them up. For example, Shanghai, the government has a scoring system that vets out speculators. So even if you pass that, you're not guaranteed to get your property. You can only buy it through a lottery system.
And speaking of those cooling measures that you've mentioned there, Mark, you did highlight during your presentation earlier today that we have seen a continued increase in property prices here in Singapore. Do you think we are likely to see cooling measures for our housing market here?
Yes, I think so, because the growth rate now for private residential is probably in the double digits year on year. If you just annualize the first 3 months of the year, we've had the strongest start since 2018. And the last time you had double-digit year-on-year growth, the government stepped in with measures to slow down prices. And the thing is, because we see this strong pace continuing in demand for property here, By the way, I would expect it to increase as the borders open, because there's probably a lot of people overseas who would have bought, but they didn't want to spend 2 weeks in a hotel room. Then, you know, since we think the price is going to go up, ironically, we think the property curbs are going to be announced soon.
What do you think is driving that demand and those prices within the more expensive properties on the market here in Singapore and in other areas within Asia, on the back of everything that's been happening with the pandemic?
A couple of things spring to mind. I mean, I suppose that the first and foremost is interest rates. And so obviously the lower interest rates are, the more affordable it is to take out a mortgage and buy a property. The other thing is that Asia has more high net worth individuals than any other region in the world. I think 38% of the high net worth individuals in the world are in Asia, and that number is only going to increase in the years ahead. More and more people are going to go into the middle class, but more and more people are also going to become quite wealthy. And therefore, intuitively, you know, that would put more pressure on prices because there's more demand.
So beyond property, what other items top the list here in Asia before we start to talk about the more affordable regions?
Actually, I don't think that for the region in Asia as a whole, we can generalize when we look at the components of our index. Really, there were big differences, but off the top of my head, I guess things that went down the most in the cities in Asia, ladies' shoes last year, their price fell by about 12%. And that's intuitive, isn't it? Because if you're not going to the office, you're not socializing as much, you're not going to buy fancy shoes. Hotel suites were down about 10%, also intuitive. Wine was down about 6%, also intuitive. I mean, people were eating out less. And then what went up was, now here's a funny one, whiskey went up 10%. I don't understand how wine goes down 6 and then whiskey goes up 10, but clearly people were drinking more whiskey. I think I was drinking more whiskey last year, actually. And then business class flights went up about 12%. And the interesting thing is, you probably remember SARS back in 2003.
Yeah.
And what happened back then is they didn't put any travel restrictions in place. But, you know, SARS, we now know, is far less contagious than COVID. COVID spreads so easily. So what happened was, in SARS, the airlines kept flying on all their routes, and to fill the airplanes, they slashed the prices. This time it was the exact opposite. They slashed the routes because nobody could fly, and therefore they had to increase the price of tickets.
I see. Well, I'm still sticking with what you mentioned about shoes, and that's given me an excuse to shoe shop. Anyway, I digress. Uh-huh. And so we've spoken about some of the items that have fluctuated in price here in the region. Let's talk about perhaps more affordable regions, as we're all, I guess, fantasizing about the possibility of working remotely and living in luxury. Tell us where came up as more affordable in this year's index, in your latest index.
Well, what I would say to start with is there's only 25 cities in our index, and they're all cities, right? So, of course, they're going to be expensive relative to other places. If you want to live in, I don't know, Sri Lanka, Penang, you can have a wonderful life that would be a lot cheaper than living in one of these big cities. But of the cities we cover, the five least expensive for high net worth individuals, where you get the most bang for your buck, if you want to live well, are Sao Paulo in Brazil, Mumbai, Mexico City, Vancouver, and Johannesburg. My own preference of those five, I think, would be Vancouver.
Okay, we're speaking with Mark Matthews, Head of Research, Asia Pacific at Bank Julius Baer. Now, another interesting trend from your report was this continued trend that we see of conscious consumerism. I mean, we've had a lot of talk over the past year on the back of everything that's been happening with COVID-19, and we've seen a huge sustainability push. Is that the main driver here?
Yeah, well, first I should tell you that conscious consumerism, conscious consumption, is a play on a much older term that was used for many years in the advertising industry called conspicuous consumerism, conspicuous consumption.
Okay.
You know, most of us think about consumer is you want to spend money on stuff to show off your wealth and power. So conscious consumption, exact opposite. You're making purchases that are ethical, sustainable. Kind of started in the 1980s with companies like The Body Shop, where they were, they made their mark by selling products that weren't tested on animals. And anyway, yes, it's a huge theme. I think along with digitalization, it is probably the biggest theme of this decade, and it's being driven by knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So we know now that what we're doing to the environment is bad. We know it more than we did 10 years ago. The end evidence is very tangible. You can just see the natural disasters that are becoming more frequent every year around the world. I mean, I've been in Singapore 22 years. I'm convinced it's become hotter since I first moved here. Then the technology is another thing. We have the ability now that we didn't have before to reduce our carbon footprint. And like, for example, the collapsing cost of solar and wind power. And we don't need big power plants anymore because we can connect all of these sources together in a much more efficient way, these energy sources. And they're very economical. So then the last thing I think is probably the most important is culture, changing society. And people are just becoming more ethical generally, I would say. Maybe they opt to travel less by airplane because they know it creates a lot of carbon emissions, or maybe they opt to eat less meat because they know that, you know, beef produces something like 10 times more carbon emissions than fish.
And speaking of investable trends, what are some of the other key trends that you'll be watching out for in the year ahead, and what does that mean for investors? Where's the potential?
Well, I think there's really two, as I said, that we feel most passionately about. And I just mentioned conscious consumer. I think the other big one is probably digitalization. That means basically allowing technology to make business and everything, you know, society, more efficient and more effective. So we see it everywhere in our lives. You know, more and more we're doing that online. We're consuming online. We're ordering taxis and food online. So the digitalization trend, every industry this is happening. It's happening in my industry, banking, with so-called fintech. So, you know, these are mega trends. They're actually interdependent, believe it or not. Something like conscious consumption is interdependent with digitalization. And so they're, in our opinion, irreversible. They reinforce themselves, and they are going to cause a big change to our economy, our society, over the next 10 years, these megatrends. So rather than being Luddites and hiding our heads in the sand and avoiding them, we should actually embrace them and invest in them, because they're going to make a lot of money.
Wonderful. Well, Mark, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today and sharing all of those insights with us and the latest on Bank Julius Baer Lifestyle Index.
You're most welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We've been speaking to Mark Matthews, Head of Research Asia Pacific at Bank Julius Baer. This is Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SBH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.